We're back.
We're back. Can't get rid of you that easily, huh?
Oh, cannot.
Just one of the modern technology.
Hey, how are you?
Good, yeah, yourself?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Very well. Very well. So, you're going to tell me about where everything's at?
I guess, first of all, where's your understanding, just so that we can cut a long story short, I guess, yeah.
Oh, I guess I'm just sort of interested that, you know, obviously there's been a lot of discussion and changes going on out there in the wider market, and I guess your parent company's at the heart of a lot of it. So just sort of, you know, I'm keen to understand sort of what it means for you guys and what it means for, you know, AIG Life and NZ.
All right, well, I guess I'll start on the broader stage, Philip, and I'll just make a couple of comments. I'll try to be as terse as possible in the interest of time, and then you ask me if you want a drill down on any of this. But I guess the best way to characterize the big picture is that for us, because of some very sophisticated investment products, these credit swaps and any other derivatives, et cetera, our parent company found itself in a position where we had a liquidity problem. This was never a solvency issue. This was never anything that had to do with our size or our scale or our assets. You know, we've been telling people our assets are $1 trillion U.S. dollars. It's actually 1.1 trillion.
Mm-hmm.
But here was this liquidity issue. I think you have done a tremendous job, as has the media over the last few quarters, at characterizing this global financial mess, I guess would be the word that I would call it, that has to do with something that apparently could never be foreseen in terms of when there is an end to the good times and when the subprime market was all of a sudden going to become something that was not desirable.
Mm.
And to make a long story short, it appears that we talked to the Fed in New York about helping us out, and I think it's my guess that the Fed may have said to us, well, why don't you see if you can get some institutional bankers who can help out. And of course, we then at that point in time talked to a consortium of banks. I have heard that Goldman Sachs was in that group. I'm actually not sure who was in that group. And I think they took a look at it, and it just might have been something that they didn't want to do, or it was too big. But certainly the U.S. government, as they did with Fannie Mae, with Freddie Mac, as they certainly now are looking to do with helping out the banks with scrub their books clean of all this mortgage mess.
Mm-hmm.
They realized, as did most learned people in financial markets globally, that if AIG's liquidity issue was not addressed, it could have led to some dire straits in the U.S. and certainly in global markets. I know it's well publicized and documented what had transpired in the preceding days with other large brand names like Lehman Brothers and Merrill Lynch and so forth. You, of course, know what has transpired in the succeeding days. This loan being announced by the Federal Reserve Bank or Board of New York, and that, of course, was the Russian stock market and all of their issues, four largest banks in Australia losing 10% of their value in the next, 24 to 48 hours. An awful lot of fear in the marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
I happen to believe unwarranted, but nevertheless, I think, you know, this resulted in a line of credit to AIG from the Federal Reserve Bank, as well as the Fed owning 79-point-some percent of the parent company, which is yet to be ratified by the
79.9.
Yeah, by the shareholders. Now, you know, a lot of people in the media seem to report that this was an $85 billion bailout, when quite frankly, it's a line of credit. And my understanding is that this is something on which AIG can draw when needed over the next 24 months. Now, it didn't take very long, of course, for the Fed to then make some changes on the board, especially at the CEO level. And they brought in this fellow named Ed Liddy, L-I-D-D-Y, and Michael can get you anything that you need on that. Very capable guy who's run some large multi-line companies in the U.S. And I think that what we are likely going to hear in the coming days and weeks and months is that solving this liquidity issue, we now can take a breath and get our acts together and pursue an orderly sale of some assets. Now, of course, the real issue is, what are those assets going to be? Philip, I don't have a crystal ball, and I don't know if you do or not. I mean, I've heard things. Everybody hears things, and I think they're all hearsay, and I think they're all rumors. You know, they include things like the domestic life operations in the U.S., the personal lines, the auto and homeowners in the U.S., two significant chunks of business for the company. People keep talking about the aircraft leasing. You know, we're the largest aircraft leasing company globally. And I've heard that all of it or some parts of it could be liquidated and could provide the repayment of the loan back to the Fed and so forth. I honestly don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's a lot of questions about whether, you know, the life business in New Zealand will be sold.
Well, that's another issue, and let's address that head on. On the one hand, some of those people who have tried to make a what I would say is a quantum leap from the global issues to a local issue, you know, while we are profitable, doing very, very well, while we are growing, some people have said, well, gee, this really is not a growth market or a developing market in our industry, and yes, that's true. Are we in some other developing markets? Yes, indeed we are. And you know, would we be better served to focus on the developing markets? I can't say that's true, because gosh, we're doing really well in some very developed markets called Hong Kong, Singapore, and the United States of America, Australia, etc. On the other hand, if people think that selling any AIG operations here in New Zealand, be it the life operations or the general operations, if they think that the sale of these particular assets would somehow play a major role in helping pay off this loan, then they don't know much about economics. Because these operations, while we're profitable, we are relatively small.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I sound like Tevye in Fiddler on the Roof. On the other hand, having told you, my dear friend, that I don't have a crystal ball, you know, what assets are these folks going to be looking at on our board as we go forward? I don't know if they're going to be assets that are easily liquidated or that are really profitable and therefore very attractive. I just don't have a feel for that. Now, we've told you before, and of course it's our standard corporate policy, that when there are rumors in the marketplace about a company or one of our companies locally somewhere around the globe being for sale, AIG doesn't comment on market rumors. I actually don't know any company, any big company, that does. I read something in the paper a couple of weeks ago about Goldman Sachs was going to buy somebody, and they asked them about it, and they said, well, we don't comment on market rumors. And I think it was a New York reporter who said, you know, that this company seldom comments on deals unless they're done.
I'll ask one more question on this one and on this particular issue, and I understand where you're coming from there. I'd been told before all this mess started that, you know, there was, you know, AIG Life may have already been on the market in New Zealand, and that came from, obviously, someone originally senior person at another company. Can you comment on that?
Yes, I can comment, and my comment is that AIG doesn't comment on market rumors.
Yeah, okay, well, we ain't going any further on that one.
You know, and there's a good reason, there's a good business reason for that, and you know that.
But I still have to ask the question.
Any good?
Yeah, I still have to ask the question, though. So how profitable was AIG Life in New Zealand?
Well, I'm not the finance guy. Mike can get this for you, and it's very, it's readily available at the company's office, but our, and you know, profit gets measured in a number of different ways.
Sure.
We do a lot of it in U.S. GAAP, as you would expect.
Mm-hmm.
There, of course, is New Zealand GAAP, et cetera. But I'll defer to Mike to get you the hard numbers.
We reported $9.3 million last year profit,
mm-hmm.
Which was up on the time before.
Three point six,
I think, offhand. And then we're running, at the moment, we're looking towards about a $12 million profit if the targets keep going as they are at the moment.
So that's a December year end, isn't it?
November.
It's actually November for us, Philip.
Yeah, and we're talking net or gross profits here?
That's our net profits.
So net, yeah, okay. So you're doing all right on market share at the moment too?
Yeah.
Well, we're doing all right. Never enough for me, but you know... you know the market, and
sure.
You know that there are three very large players, you know, Saab and AMP and AXA, and after you draw a line after those guys, then quite frankly, from fourth on down to eighth or whatever, we're always just, a few thousands of dollars or whatever apart, a few points apart. We've been fourth or fifth in market share in the last year since I've been here, but I think before that it was six. It's never a big, noticeable difference. Now, I've always thought the reason for that is, you know, when you're in the independent financial advisor market, I don't think year in and year out you're going to see any of those companies beyond the big three make a big quantum, you know, shift or leap. And quite frankly, I think if you look year on year, even those big three, it just hasn't been much movement. It's been pretty entrenched. Well,
why do you think that is?
Well, I think that's because brokers are entrenched. You know, I guess I think back to the pastor of our church when I was a kid. He bought a new Oldsmobile Delta 88 every even numbered year, every 2 years. And, you know, why did he buy that instead of a new Ford or a new Cadillac? You know, some of this is just they're creatures of habit, or maybe the companies in the industry haven't done enough to distinguish themselves over the last few years. That's speculation on my part. But what we're thrilled about, even though it's not a big part of the market today, but it's a growth part of the market, that is, of course, the group and employee benefit market.
Mm-hmm.
And we're very, very proud that we're number two in market share in that space, and we are growing and growing well.
Yeah, that's good, isn't it? Oh, it's a good market, that one too, isn't it? I mean, I'm always surprised that more people don't operate in it.
Yeah, it's probably the growth pocket in the New Zealand market overall at the moment, you know, from our perspective.
That's the greatest.
You know, and when you, Philip, when you look at full employment, and quite frankly, almost anybody working for any company or any firm or any, you know, they can pretty much leave and find another job elsewhere pretty easily. That's got to get inside the head of an employer saying, "Gosh, I wish I could find something extra to add value to help attract and or retain employees that doesn't cost a whole lot and indeed has value, and of course that's a benefit.
Definitely. How in the last week or so, how have your proposal levels been going?
Well, actually, knock on wood, we had a very good week last week. And one of the days last week, I can't remember which day, was actually almost a record day for us for the year. I must tell you, I'm gratified by the professionalism of the vast majority of brokers and of producer group heads and of reinsurers who get it. They understand that what is going on in New York does not affect what we do here in terms of reserving or our profits or our obligations to policyholders. I'm not going to say it hasn't been a non-issue, because certainly there have been a few calls. I think Mike could tell you the increase we had in phone calls or the increase we had in hits on our webpage, but it was a very, whatever that increase was, it was almost like within a day or a day and a half, and then it just fell back to normal levels.
Yeah, it's about 300% in the first couple of days while information was still fresh, and then it's basically come back down to normal levels. But as an indication, one of our regional sales managers was jumping up and down in the office this morning. She's had two relatively large cases written this morning, so if people still have confidence in us, which is great.
Yeah. So even though when the news sort of started to break at the start of last week, it didn't make any difference to the flow of proposals coming in?
I think there was a bit of nervousness in the first day or two, but once the news around the Federal Reserve assistance and the line of credit that we have there, from then on it's been nothing but support from people, so it's been really great.
Mm-hmm. I think you have to remember, as low as the stock price was on Friday morning in New York, by the close of business it was up 60%.
Sure.
Wall Street itself was up close to 400 points. We'll see what happens tomorrow morning, Monday morning in the States, but I read a few news sources over the weekend on the internet, and it seemed to be that the majority of people, I forget one of the phrases, it might have been on MSN, but it said that people were shrugging off this short-term concern. And listen, mate, I do business here. I'm an American. I'm an American taxpayer. I've been in the financial services industry for 30 years. You know, was I jumping up and down thinking it was absolutely wonderful that the Feds came in and, you know, they're going to do this deal for all of the banks, and they did the deal for AIG, and they're stabilizing markets in other ways? Not particularly happy that they're doing it or having to do it. However, when I realized that if it had not happened, you know, that's when you put your politics and your fiscal hat and everything else aside and say, my God, thank God they did, because I can't imagine. You know, AIG was so big that if the liquidity problem had been allowed to persist, I mean, you can talk to experts in the markets in Hong Kong, London, globally, and they shudder to think what that would have happened simply because of our size and scale.
Sure, yeah. Pretty
amazing. One of the interesting comments, oddly enough, from Don Brash on the radio the other day as well, David's information, he was the Reserve Bank Governor back up until about 4 or 5 years ago. And he pointed out that Bernanke, the head of the Federal Reserve in America, his academic reputation was built around the 1929 stock market crash and how that should have been handled. So we couldn't have anyone, I guess, as far as the Federal Reserve goes, leading this whole situation any better.
Yeah. Interesting, eh?
To me, I haven't seen it, but they said what he wrote about when he was a young student was the Fed did about everything they could have done the wrong way, and he was determined to not let that happen this time. So
yeah, that's good.
Listen, Philip, have we not sent you the letter that we're sending to all of our policies?
Yeah, Viv sent them to me today.
And to all of our advisors.
Yeah. So Just another question, and I understand, and I'm interested in your views on it. I understand that yeah, a number of other carriers have been quite interested in talking to advisors about shifting blocks of book from AIG to themselves. What have you heard around that?
Well, you've just touched on a sensitive area, Philip, and I will also speak to that directly. I happen to have attended the ISI board meeting in Wellington last week, as well as the ISI annual general meeting.
Uh-huh.
And everyone to my face has expressed understanding and concern. Now, when I say everyone, I'm talking about everyone who was either there or wanted to talk with me.
Uh-huh.
Not everyone was represented at the meeting. And I want to take the high road here because I am very proud of my professionalism and my ethics and the responsibility that I have as an executive of this company here. I will not, sir, make a disparaging comment about any of our worthy competitors.
Uh-huh.
Having said that, have we heard about some competitors? Yes, we have. Is it anybody who spoke to me or attended the meeting in Wellington last week? No. Have we heard that some folks seem to have either not fully understood the issues, or perhaps they're just, I don't want to cast aspersions. I don't know what the motivations would be for somebody to say or do something of an underhanded, unprofessional, unethical manner. But let me tell you what I did. And this certainly is not, this is on the record, sir.
Uh-huh.
When that was brought to my attention, I did what I think a good CEO in this industry, in this country, should do. I called Vance Arkenstall, CEO of ISI.
Uh-huh.
And I said, here is what we have heard. It is anecdotal. I hope it is not true. I have no interest in checking it out. I have told my people to take the high road. As a matter of fact, if one of our regional sales managers makes a disparaging comment about the competition, that is grounds for severe discipline, including termination. We just won't go there. He had heard some. He was as disappointed as I was, and he said, David, just leave it with me. You know what? I did.
Uh-huh.
I didn't even think about it this weekend. I've already forgotten it until you brought it up this morning. And, you know, it doesn't matter what industry and what country we're talking about, Philip. When I think about milk, you know, this is something one of my grandmothers used to say, God bless her. She used to say, David, remember, the cream rises to the top.
Absolutely.
And the sediment and the junk falls to the bottom.
Yeah, you're not wrong. That sounds good. So where to now for you guys? Business as usual, I guess, but what else will you be doing anything sort of new or different or in the market to sort of reinforce where you're at?
Well, the business as usual, we believe, is absolutely upfront, as is our style, upfront, talking to you,
uh-huh.
the media, talking to the heads of large producer groups, getting something out under my signature to every policyholder, to every advisor, so uh-huh. we speak clearly and speak the truth, and they can take great comfort. Everything else that we're doing, if it's our need-based selling, the lifestyle check, moving from paper version to electronic version, that continues. Anything we're doing in product development, that continues.
There's a couple of campaigns which we had planned for release this week. They'll be out by the end of this week, one around the new mortgage product. And the following week around some comms about our claims paying in operations, which, as I said, they were planned about 3 or 4 weeks ago before all this happened. So
what's the claims paying one?
But essentially, it's just providing to all our advisors the same information that's available, or that we've already released it once before, around our claims history over the period of 2006-07, I think it is. And it's just re-releasing that alongside a flow chart of how to put new business with us and a few other things, which, as I said, we'd written that and had that signed off, you know, probably 2 weeks ago. So it was just delayed by a few days, which was what happened last week.
Yeah.
Well, that's something that I asked for when I got here a year ago. I said, I want you guys at some point in time and the marketing team to tell the story. It has been my experience in the 12 countries in which I've worked in my 30 years in the business that there have really only been a couple of countries, the U.S. being one, that does a good job of telling people, look, we don't just exist to collect premiums.
Mm.
We're in the business of paying claims. You know, why do people come to us for products and for security so that if and when, God forbid, the need is there because of death, because of disability, because of trauma, because of accident, because of disease. You know, this is why you have paid this premium, so that you are financially secure.
Mm.
And I think we as an industry historically, not just AIG Life, I think we historically, you know, if we sit down and talk to one of our valued policyholders and we say, have we communicated with you in the last year, 2 years, 3 years? Yeah, maybe, I guess. Well, when have we communicated to you and what have we said? And if it's only to talk to them about a pending claim or a premium increase on a yearly renewable term product, then we're not doing a very good job.
Mm, mm, mm.
So, I mean, you've seen the copies of this absolutely groundbreaking consumer communication piece that we put together, this Outlook magazine. It's just, I mean, the reviews on that are absolutely rave. And I said, listen, guys, this is not supposed to be an insurance piece.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's about whatever we want to say we are to the public. Sure, everybody knows we're an insurance company, but, you know, what slot do we fill? And we said, well, as long as we're in the risk business, we think we exist to support TV lifestyle.
Yes, yeah.
So along the way, I said, well, great, then let's tell people, by the way, we pay 100% of legitimate claims, and let's talk about the difference that our products have made in people's lives. So there's a marketing reason, and quite frankly, a good reason to do that, because as the saying goes, we do good, and we ought to promote ourselves.
Oh, definitely, definitely. Oh, I look forward to seeing your comms on it all.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Sounds good. Anything else you need to tell me?
As usual, is, you know, we're getting ready to all of our 2009 plans are proceeding. It is truly business as usual.
Yeah, new website in development at the moment, a few other bits and pieces, so yeah, we're just carrying on as we
can't give away too many secrets now.
Oh, I've got to give away a few. No, that sounds good. If there's anything else, I'll give you guys a call back.
Fantastic.
Yeah, look, thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
You bet, Phil.
Okay.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Bye.
Bye. Now, if you can...
I'll mention it to our property guys and make sure I mention it to them.
So who's in that space?
In direct property?
Yeah.
Well, Stephen Costley is the general manager of AMP Property Portfolio.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got the ultimate responsibility there. But, it's certainly been... quite a large project.
Yes, yeah, I bet.
Yeah.
I think we're going to see some quite interesting sort of pie treatments sort of coming out this year in terms of all sorts of different things which people probably didn't think could be pied, but will be.
Yeah, well, actually, an idea that I've often mentioned to people is, and mostly just inside these walls, but to a few people outside as well, I wouldn't want to tread too far around, but the investment properties, you know, like residential investment properties, notwithstanding the things I was saying before about the state of the cycle that we're in, ultimately, anyone who holds an investment property that's cash flow positive, and if their tax rate is higher than 33% or will be higher than 30% after the 1st of April, would be better off holding a rental property within a diversified vehicle. You'll get pie treatment, so you'll get better after-tax returns, and you'll also naturally have a more diversified portfolio rather than holding just a few investment properties you could be holding a portfolio of investment properties and getting that diversification as well as getting the pie benefit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's sort of along the lines that someone would build a fund of residential properties?
Yeah, well, that was what I thought. As soon as the pie rules came in, I was trying to think, well, what are the obvious things that are out there where people have got a lot of money invested in that could be turned into a pie vehicle to make them more tax efficient for the average investor? And the first obvious one was cash deposits, and then anything to do with fixed interest. And then another obvious one that a lot of New Zealanders have got money invested in is residential property.
Mm.
Now, some of them might not necessarily want to buy a vehicle because they've got, you know, they might have it negatively geared, you know, in which case they don't want to have the implied treatment. But for people who are just using property as a way of generating income and it's cash flow positive, then they'll generate more tax income if they've got it going through a pie and have the benefit of diversification at the same time.
Yeah, the issue at the moment is finding cash flow positive properties.
Yeah, that's right.
yeah, a bit tricky, I understand.
Yeah.
Oh, I think, you know, there's probably people out there who are working on this at the moment, and we know people are sort of looking at where they can put sort of finance company debentures into pies as well.
Yeah.
It's probably a bit trickier than most people realise, but I know work is going on in various places with it.
I think we'd like our fixed interest people are still a little bit wary of finance companies and anything to do with CEOs and subprime and all that sort of stuff. So it's certainly one of the things that our diversified portfolios are very straightforward in the sort of investments that they have. So our fixed interest is just purely straightforward fixed interest, nothing sliced and diced and put into a new product.
Oh, and I think there's a real place for, you know, the good, simple sort of products these days, which I think a lot of these engineered sort of things are, things are coming home to roost on them.
Oh, certainly, and I mean, the bad side is if people didn't realise it and they end up losing money, then, you know, that certainly, you could feel for people who, had blind faith in these things or perhaps blind faith in their investment advisor.
Yes.
On the other hand, I mean, it is something that, you know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, so people will now be more cognizant of the risks that are out there in these high-yielding products.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and I think there's a lot of sort of, I'll call it navel-gazing going on about some of the stuff which has been used.
Yeah.
But that's a whole other story.
Yeah.
Anyway,
Yeah, another story, of course, is the KiwiSaver, which there's been a lot of media attention about how bad KiwiSaver's been, and you've only got to take account of the government kickstart, and no one has lost money at all. They could have had the worst performing investment since starting out in KiwiSaver, and they'd still be well ahead because of the government kickstart that you got from that.
Absolutely, the returns look pretty good when you throw that,
haven't they? Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a whole other subject which we'll sort of spend more time on this year too.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'll leave it at that. If I've got anything else, I'll come back to you on it, or if I need to clarify anything.
Yep.
Okay?
All right.
Yeah, thanks, Leo.
Okay.
Bye.